This is Outside the Round with Matt Barile, a Rage Rowdy podcast.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Outside the Round. I'm your host, Matt Barile, and today, a very special guest. We got the one, the only, a guy I've seen in concert a bunch over the years and very excited to have him here today. The one, the only, Tyler Farr, T-Farr. How we doing?
Good. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, brother. I think the last time that I saw you in concert, the first time I saw you in concert was about coming up on 10 years ago in Sayreville, New Jersey.
That was in the rolling days.
Dude, that was when you guys were gunning, man. That was
We was gunning, we was drinking, we was doing everything.
Yeah, you were coming off the Burning It Down tour back in the day with Aldean.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, well, I remember seeing you. It was a club show, and we were doing a crazy tailgate across the street at the VFW. We used to always throw big parking lot parties. Back in my drinking days.
Now, that's redneck as shit there.
Yeah, in New Jersey at the VFW. And we used to, it would be dollar beers inside, but we'd bring our own and bring a little system, PA and DJ, and have whatever.
Who says New Jersey isn't redneck as hell?
Oh, dude, you've seen it all. You've been all around.
I've seen it all the way up there, all the way to Maine. Once everyone thinks of like the Northeast as they think of New York City. That's all they think of.
Or Boston. Or Philly, yeah.
And you go 30 minutes outside of any of those cities and it goes zero to like Dale Earnhardt and a two shakes of a Persian kitten's whiskers, buddy.
This is going to be awesome. Two shakes of a Persian cat's whiskers. Hell yeah. So you just had a birthday, right? Happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I turned 41. Real pumped about it.
How's it feel?
Besides, I'm still alive.
You're still alive, but how's it feel to be in your 40s now?
It hurts. Like, everything's hurting.
Just the whole body just hurts.
All the dumb stuff that probably got me on ridiculousness.
Yeah.
All the like falling off balconies and wrecking side by sides. It's now starting to hurt.
The jackass days.
The just bad decisions. Not that I don't still make them, but they're just more few and far between. But a lot of those, now it's like I wake up, I'm like, oh, top of the morning, and something pops. And I'm like, oh, hell. For instance, my shoulder wrecked a scooter in Waco, Texas after a show driving. There was a scooter parked out my bus.
So you're like, I got to drive this thing.
Looked fun. Yeah. Even though it was dark and it was raining. Drove it to the hotel. Hit some railroad tracks. Boom, boom.
Ugh.
A tear in my labia or my labrum. Not my labia. My labrum. I don't have a labia.
I was going to say, I don't think you got one of those.
Might.
You might.
It is 2025.
You never know. You never know.
Hey, but Trump's back in office.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He is, so you never know. And you're originally from Garden City, Missouri. What's Garden City, Missouri like? We were talking about it a little before we got on here.
Well, I talked to my buddy a couple months ago, Spence, and he said there's a lot of meth there now, so we have that.
Okay.
That's a little different from when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Back when I was growing up, it's like, oh, he's doing the, hey, he's on the weed.
Oh, and weed was
he's
like,
on the weed.
Yeah.
You know, like he's a pothead. Stay away from him. My mother's like, son, he's bad news. He's on the weed. Now it's like, oh, we got a little meth, you know.
Yeah, but small town vibes.
It's small town. It's a farm town. But no, I haven't been there in a minute. But it was growing up. Like, I worked at this place called Nico Seeds, and I would sack corn. And throw them. This was back when I was in better shape because I was throwing sacks of freaking corn. Like,
yeah.
Like I can just hear Craig Morgan's International Harvester playing while I'm just
cranking, throwing corn. You're tossing in rhythm.
Sweating. Yeah. Had maybe a couple abs still. And, you know, and it was just, it was kind of different then, but it was always based on like the farming. That's what my community was about. Our high school was in the middle of a freaking pasture surrounded by cows. I remember like a buddy of mine in high school, Vic Mueller, they'd call him on the intercom to tell him his labs had got out because he had a lab farm. They raised Labradors the road and his labs done got out and just calling him to the front desk. Damn. Like it was rural. We had a gravel parking lot. And I remember an old boy, he combined and parked his freaking tractor and walk into school. Yeah. So he'd combine in the morning and go to school at, you know, 8.
Damn.
It was a...
Yeah, it's a different world.
It was a country situation.
Yeah. So what then... It's crazy now looking back to... You put out Hot Mess in 2012, and then Redneck Crazy and all that stuff happens in 2013. So that's about the time you start coming out here. What was the shock for you going from Missouri to Nashville? I know Nashville 2012, 2013 was different than Nashville is in 2025.
Oh, completely. And I actually came here about the age of 21. Yeah, around age of 21.
Yeah.
So I've been here about 20 years, and I actually moved here, started working the door at Tootsie's.
Oh, you're a bouncer as well. I used to work the door.
Yeah, bouncer's a little, you know. I was always good at talking to people.
That was my skill, too.
You don't want to do that. Why are you doing that? You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Let's think about that. Hey, bud. You know, so I never really, I wasn't one of these bouncers you see on these TikTok videos, like throwing a guy through a freaking door.
Yeah.
I can always find an easier, more peaceful way out of a situation.
Yeah, same. That's what I would do, too.
Unless, like, someone smoked me with a beer bottle or something. Oh, yeah. That's a different story.
You got to go hands-on, you're hands-on. But there were other guys there that were built for that.
Exactly.
I was always a day shift guy, mostly.
Yeah, I'm 5'10", and, you know, 5'10".
Yeah, same.
So it's like, you know, I'm not 6'6", you know, there's like these other bouncers.
Yeah, I don't have any military, law enforcement, collegiate athlete thing like they have
now. I was a little mean and a little wild card.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that made people like, you know, someone's like, man, he's got that crazy eye.
I ain't messing with him. Yeah.
No, they would mess with that. I was good at talking to everybody. But I worked at Tootsie's and then eventually started singing there about 4 nights a week, you know, 10 to 2:30. Did that for like 2 years and moved back to Missouri.
Wow.
Because I was like, I mean, I was drinking way too much, and it was an experimental period of my life.
Yeah, being that young and being in a city like this.
And, I mean, it was cool. It's where I cut my teeth. But I moved back to Missouri, and I'm like, I don't want it. I wanted to sing my own songs. And this was back, you know, I found my binder the other day where I'd wrote down all the lyrics to, like, Working Man's Blues.
Yeah.
Still Doing Time by George Jones, Vern Gosden songs. Freaking Vince Gill, you know, wrote them out, wrote the chords, and we learned them. We didn't have these iPads and phones. And would just sit here. We memorized these things.
Yeah, you had to.
And it really taught me a lot how to entertain a crowd. And I still use it to this day. So it was kind of a stepping stone, and I moved back home. Then Red Akins called me, and that was right when he got the Peach Picker started. He heard a demo I did whenever I was like 17, because my stepdad played guitar with George Jones. My mom married him when I was about 16, and I went on the road with Jones. This is a long story about
go for it. Yeah,
so I went on the road one summer and got into that's when I really started loving country music.
Yeah,
like the old school stuff, the storytelling.
Yeah.
And so that's when I really got involved in it. And I have ADD, so I'm bouncing back and forth. But fast forward, my stepdad did do a demo on me, had me go to Nashville. Well, Red Akins ends up hearing this demo when I'm, you know, 23, through a hunting buddy of mine, because I was wanting to be in the hunting industry.
Yeah.
Kind of first and foremost. I just could always kind of sing, and he heard it and was like, hey, you plan on coming back to Nashville? And I'm like, well, I mean, if you want to work with me, yeah, like, because I listened to Red, you know, in high school and stuff. So I moved back, didn't play the bars again. I wasn't drinking. You know, I was working landscape and riding on the side. I remember working at Sportsman's Grill downtown.
Wow, yeah.
While I got a, you know, developmental deal with Sony, and I was writing, had a publishing deal. And I remember working, and like I'd see songwriters come in, and I'm like, oh God, you know, I'm working back there, which I eventually got fired for dipping on the job.
That's a hell of a way to go.
Yeah. But yeah, it was just a huge change coming from where I came from to Nashville. Now, Nashville then was not like it is now. There was pretty much all the singers that sang downtown. I think Craig Morgan was singing, or not Craig Morgan, Craig Campbell was singing downtown the same time I was. And it was Kiefer and Shauna was down there. They were singing.
Yeah.
And like we all kind of knew each other. There was just legends, Tootsie, Second Phil, Roberts, probably six honky tonks.
Yeah.
We'd sing, you know, get a little toasted, go to Hermitage Cafe, wait till the sun comes up, sober up, drive home. And it was just freaking honky tonking.
Yeah, dude. Like you said, what a place to cut your teeth. And that generation, think of all the, like, going on the road doesn't seem as bad when you're used to doing the 4 hours like that and then hanging to drink with your buddies and then go to Hermitage Cafe. RIP to that place, by the way.
Well, and
such an institution. I love Hermitage Cafe.
God, dude, ain't no telling who Doug Stone may walk in. It's like John Michael may swing in, you know, and that back then, like, singers would come into Tootsie's. Like, big artists would come in, you'd get them up, and I don't know, I remember John Michael Montgomery singing Wind Beneath My Wings.
Wow.
But in the background, you remember that song?
Yeah. That's wild.
Bring a tear to a glass eye.
Yeah, and you don't, it's the way that it is now with the tourism in town and Broadway being a different animal. You still have guys that'll pop down and be Broadway guys, but now that everybody's got a cell phone, the moments are different.
It is, and it's changed, and I mean, I would be like, yeah, it is. I mean, I kind of hate it because it took the old nostalgia.
It's the nostalgia, and it's all those moments you're talking about, or you had to be there kind of things. Now it's you can see it on a phone or something like that, and it doesn't make it as special. And now the oversaturation, there's so many bars down there.
And
it's tough.
And a lot of artists, you know, they took a different, like, they've done it a lot differently just because of the social media came along, TikTok came along, the whole industry's changed. But I'm kind of glad, you know, I did it the way I did it.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't have learned the way I did, you know, so it kind of made me who I am as an artist. And, you know, when Rhett called me, I moved back to Nashville, started writing with them. And that's when things kind of started taking off. Him and Dallas Davison, Ben Haislip, they was working with me and got my demo on the desk of Jim Catino at Sony.
Big Jim, man. There's only one Big Jim.
And we're back. I'm back with him now.
Yeah,
he's producing
time.
The new stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just kind of went back to the – I'm like, hell, we got a pretty good batting average. You know, he produced two albums, and they were like the first two albums in a decade to debut on the Billboard Top 5.
Yeah.
Which is still crazy. It blows my mind. But it was – I kind of took the long route, but that's just, I guess, my style, so –
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. And then you talk about, like, the Peach Picker guys and Jason and Colt and all these. You kind of became adopted into this Georgia fraternity. Like, you were repping the Georgia hat. Like,
that's when, you know, that's people are like, how are you? You know, and Jason still gives me shit. He's like, you're not from Georgia. I was like, no, but I've been a Georgia fan since I was 22.
Yeah.
So, suck it. Yeah, you know, like they were not good.
Yeah, the Mark Richt days.
Had to wait through all that to get to some championships. But they were some of my first like mentors, and Colt Ford definitely was a mentor when I was playing in his band. I remember Brantley driving a blacked out flat black excursion, pulling a trailer. And me and him and Colt was playing a lot of different places and man, you know, the industry is just all about friendships. And, like, it went from that to me getting a deal, finally signing a full deal with Sony and riding Lee Bryce's bus opening for him. And this was – I was there when he had his first, like, more than a memory hit.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, when he first launched. And it was just a cool thing to see. And I was kind of the comfort human, I guess, on the road. I don't know. They're like, Neil Farr will do it, you know, whatever. Yeah. Mikey will eat it.
Yeah.
You know. And then, like, I remember riding Josh Thompson's bus, opening for him, Rodney Atkins.
Josh Thompson, a guy that was so ahead of his time, man.
Was.
Some of those, that record, man.
Was.
That he put out.
Out here.
Incredible. still hits to this day. And it's just, again, a guy where there's so many guys and girls from that era where you're like, how did they not get to where some of those other folks got? Like, you look at like the Adam Craigs of the world. Like,
yeah, it's just like a fork. And like sometimes I still listen to that song. Out here, our houses are protected by the good Lord and a gun. You might meet them both. Come out here, not welcome, son. I mean, like.
Yeah, he was just writing redneck poetry, man.
And that's what he does, and he does it probably one of the best. I got a song we're cutting of his on this new album.
Awesome.
It's great, and I've cut other songs of his. And Jared Naaman, I remember riding his bus, and these were in, I call this era of my life, the training wheel days.
Okay.
Because a lot of crazy stuff happened, you know, riding Lee and Jared's bus, and I'm just like, wow.
And those boys back in the day, that was a party. Those guys.
I don't know if anyone really partied harder. If you partied harder than them back in the day, you were dead.
Yeah.
I mean, it got crazy. And I was right there in the middle of it. But we're all getting older now, so had to tone her down a notch as kids and stuff.
Yeah, and life changes, man.
But I wouldn't trade it for anything, honestly.
Yeah, man, and it's you coming up at the time you did. It's like that was when country was really starting. I mean, obviously, 90s gold was great. Like what Tim and Kenny and guys like that were doing in like the early 2000s. But the 2010s, man, we wouldn't be where we're at right now with country music if it weren't for 2010 to like 2019, 2020. That decade, man, country just seemed to go from like something that was in the honky tonks to the arenas and the amphitheaters, and you got to be a part of that.
Yeah, and it was great. And I remember like when I first signed my first deal and I had a publishing deal, I remember hearing about this guy, and he's about kind of my age, and he's this little redneck some bitch from Arkansas, and had this song was small town USA, and but I'm like, oh shit, I got this guy that sings redneck stuff too. Basically very similar, you know, to what I was doing then, and I'm like, hell, and I was like, he's pretty good. And it was Justin Moore's right when he kind of took off before we released a single and stuff, but it was like in right then, like people wanted that blue collar smacking in the face, you know, non-sissified country.
Yeah, they wanted that, the redneck shit, they wanted the party shit, which the FGL guys and that bro country era, and then they wanted the sad shit that still made you tear up, like those songs you were singing at Tootsie's.
Yeah, they did. And I remember like the first major tour, you know, when I found out about it, I lost my crap, you know, because they're like, we got the Aldean tour, because that was our one we were shooting for. We had other offers because Redneck Crazy just took off. And I remember, it just became a hit. It went number one, I think. And Whiskey in My Water was taking off. And we get on that tour, and it was, I'll probably never do a bigger tour than that, because it was me, FGL, and Jason. FGL could have been headlining on their own. I mean, they had like four number ones
off that debut record
a freaking year or something. It was that time, which I know everybody knows the time I'm talking about, where you cannot turn on the radio for 30 minutes and not hear three FGL songs.
Yeah,
it's like Sipping on Fire, Cruise, you know, all them songs were just, I mean, it was just FGL world. Yeah. And Jason was killing it. You talk about a crazy tour, like we were doing double headers, triple headers, and Major League Baseball stadiums.
Yeah, you guys came to Citizens Bank in Philadelphia. Yeah.
Freaking Miranda joined us on some of those shows.
Yeah, go up to Boston, do Fenway.
Like, I mean, it was me, FGL, Miranda, and Aldean, like all on the show. Like, it was just crazy.
And you're probably in your head like, what am I doing here? I was on Tootsie's not that long ago. Like, you had just... Like, but that's also a moment where you belonged on there, dude, because you were doing your hits and you were doing your damn thing too.
Buddy, I still don't feel like I belong on there, but it was pretty surreal. Like, I was just holding on by the handlebars, just like, oh, like I was on a rocket, and you don't have an instruction manual for that. So I was just like, this is crazy. And you know, you just do the best you can. And it was great. And we had that, and then And I was very surprised the next year when Jason asked me to tour with him 2 years in a row with him and Cole Swindell. And it was just a cool time, exciting period of my life. And thank God I didn't have a daughter till later, because Jesus, that'd have been, first of all, I wasn't even ready for that.
Yeah, dude. What's it been like now, this stage of your life where you're a father, you're living life now. You look back to where you were 10 years ago to where life's at now.
Yeah, so like, you know, there's a little time taken off, and I think it happened for a reason. I'm glad it happened when it did, because COVID had hit, you know, which was unfortunate, because me and Jason just released our first single, Only Truck in Town, and then 3 weeks later, COVID hit, and I just done this big radio tour. And my thing is, I love talking to people and interacting with people, with radio folks. I made a lot of great relationships.
Yeah. And,
you know, that's where my strength was, is I could always find something in common with anyone, you know, whether they're from the city, whether they're from the country, whatever. So that COVID took that away. But then we have my daughter, and I just went into full, like, dad mode. And that's what I've been, you know, she just turned 4 a week or so ago.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so that's, you know, what I've been doing. And now we're, you know, it's a new year and a new set of tasks. And we're just putting out new music and really getting after it again. I honestly, for the pretty much since the first time since COVID.
Yeah.
Like really getting after it.
Yeah, that's a good feeling, man. Now you talk about, it's funny, my girlfriend has a little 6-year-old girl, and we first got together, she was 4, so I got introduced to the cartoons of now, like the Blueies.
Oh yeah.
The Paw Patrol.
I can probably sing you.
The Super Kitties, bro. Like all those little, so you find yourself now watching, like raising a little girl, man. There's something special about that.
Yeah, there is. There's something special about me probably being able to sing all the songs from The Little Mermaid, to Frozen.
Let it go, man.
To her, yeah. She and my daughter can sing too, which is unfortunate. I hope she doesn't go that route.
Why do you say that?
It's because I know the path in front of her.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you like uncertainty and a lot of never know what's going to happen, but you know, it's just, there's not a lot of stability in
that. Having to bet on yourself.
It's,
and a lot of things out of your control.
Like, yeah, let's be golfer, tennis player, doctor, anything,
anything but that.
But that.
Yeah.
But I try to keep her into classic cartoons, but.
Yeah, like Looney Tunes.
I downloaded the whole Looney Tunes because they're, you know, you had all that stuff going on with, like, you know, you get some of these cartoons that are a little shady where it's like, you know, it's maybe directing kids the wrong way. And I'm like, I want to see Bugs Bunny or the Roadrunner, Wile E. Coyote
trying to
blow up the Roadrunner and that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Very PG, you know, people trying to blow each other up, you know.
Yeah, yeah. like you're Tannerite on
the farm. Yeah, exactly. No, but it's it's been amazing. Like, it's changed me a lot of ways, and I've started writing, you know, different too, like about that.
Writing dad songs.
Yeah. Yeah. And like to be like, I wrote a song called Questions that's out there, but I wrote that, I think my last EP. And it was, and you know, you got to be honest too. Like, when I wrote that song, I wasn't like trying to, you know, act like I'm a perfect dad. I'm like, I still don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm raising a girl. I don't even know. Really don't even understand my wife half the time. How am I supposed to understand a 4-year-old?
Yeah.
You know, so it's just a big learning thing. Yeah. But it's awesome.
That's awesome, man. Now, we talk about this next chapter. So we're planning, I know, to get a lot of songs out this year in 2025. And you closed 24 with Wait For It, which to me, dude, that to me is a live show, like a live set song. Like,
it is.
It just kicks you in the teeth. Like, it just, it rocks, man.
It's just a redneck stomper. Like,
it's a Tyler Farr song.
It
it's
is.
A redneck stomper.
It's a, you know, it wasn't like we were shooting for radio or anything. You know, it was just like, hey, we're back. We've cut new music. We're releasing new music. This is the segue into what's to come.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that song, we open our set with it, and it's just a, perfect. It's a great live song. Yeah. And when I'm cutting songs, I'm like, I'm looking at a song. What is this? Is this a radio single? Is this a, you know, is it a, just a song to, a shock and awe song to really get people's attention? Is it down, you know, so that's what that song was, is a live song. Like, hey, we're back and, you know, got coming to a bar near you. Coming to Barney, you coming out on the 21st.
Yeah, which it'll be out when we're dropping this. And that's a song that I know the team's excited about. You seem to be excited about. Talk about that one. And it kind of being the follow-up to A Guy Walks Into a Bar 10 years later.
Yeah, and I mean, that song, it's and I will say this, it's hard to get compliments out of Al Dean. That's not an easy task, especially if you're me. Because I've always been like the little brother, you know, and so he's just, and he, you know, he's just trying to make me better, and I love him to death. We're great friends, but he, on that song, he said, this is the best song I've heard you cut since The Guy Walks Into a Bar.
Wow.
So that's a pretty, he doesn't, like I said, he don't hand them out like cupcakes, you know, so that was a pretty big statement, but I agree with him on that. I think this song is going to kind of shape where I'm going, and it, you know, kind of getting back to doing what I do. And that's just like singing country music and singing music that the people connect with.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think it is about the theme of a bar within country music and with the songs? Because you got to see it from, obviously, as a patron going to bars, working security in the bars where your people watch, you're seeing everything, and then playing in the bars, man.
There's something about heartbreak and stuff. It just connects you to people. You know, just like old country, like back in the Great Depression.
Yeah.
People like hearing those old sad, like it just gave them something to connect to. And that's why I feel like this song will connect, because it's got some sad in it. You know, it makes you want to crack a cold beer, and it, you know, it just is what it is. It's just the truth.
Yeah. That's what country music is, man. It's three chords and the truth. Now it's like three chords and trap beats and the truth. It's
And like, as far as like that goes, like, you know, tracks and putting that a drum loop and stuff. Like, yeah, if a course country is shit, I did with Jelly Roll. Like, yeah, it has a drum loop on there. Yeah, there's track, but it called for that. Like, I don't try to use that stuff over excessively.
Yeah.
Use it where needed.
Yeah, and everybody has their own style. And that's another thing that you've kind of gotten to be in town for, is the changing of. Now it's not even like that's taking over. It's like there's so many different avenues within country damn music.
Well, it's flooded with, you know, I'm not a huge fan of TikTok because I hate filming myself.
Yeah, you hate having, it's like another, you're like, I want to write songs, I want to spend time with my family, I want to kill shit on my farm.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Like, just, you know, I've always kind of been a what you see is what you get kind of guy, and I don't, you know, think I should have to share all that with the whole world, but you got to now, so we post some stuff, more stuff, and but the TikTok's kind of changed the whole game, and it's good for a lot of artists, because a lot of guys that wouldn't know how to get started or want to be a crazy person like me and just pack up all their stuff in a Hyundai Tiburon and drive to Nashville and say, screw it, we'll see what happens. They don't have to, because they can get on TikTok and sing in a hallway. They might get famous for it, you know, and it's opened up, because there's so many great singers out there. There's a lot of shitty singers too.
Yeah, and those guys get viral too, which is wild. That's the thing about
TikTok. It's just a mecca of just, you kind of got to filter. There's so many people trying to be country music artists. So it's like, I'll hear really great. I'm like, dang, where the hell did he come from? You know, and then I'm like, oh, that's awful.
Yeah, you see a mix, and it's crazy how TikTok has had more of an impact than Vine had. Because Vine back in the day, that was another one.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
Vine was, you had to get to them in, I think it was like 5 or 6 seconds. It was the really short form, yeah. MySpace, I'm sure you remember that, those days. Like, because you're also part of, like, when, like, social media started.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, artists having a Facebook profile.
Oh, yeah, I had dial-up AOL Messenger.
AOL, what was your AOL name?
I don't.
Do you remember?
Probably Little Sleaze Kitten or something. I don't know.
Mine was Yankee Fan Matt B. It was the stupidest name.
I don't know.
Yankee Fan, yeah.
I don't know what it was, but I know I got in trouble several times from my mom because we had a landline.
Oh, so you were on the computer while she was trying to use the phone.
You know, you pick up the phone. Like, it just started beeping.
Yeah.
Tyler, get off the internet. I'm like, hurry up, exiting out of all the stuff I was on I wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah.
And, but it's been crazy to see it all change.
Yeah, to where, like, you can reach your fans at any time. It's not just during a radio interview or doing a show now.
So it's good. It's good and bad. Like, yeah. There's a bunch of crap on there. But there's a lot of inspirational stuff and a lot of artists that don't know exactly how to get their stuff out. They now have a outlet to do that.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it's just flooded the industry with a lot of artists, and our genre has never seen this before, so it's just a whole new thing.
Yeah, are there any artists that you've kind of seen coming up, or songwriters, guys that you write with now that are like younger cats that you're seeing come up?
Well, I mean, it's Cameron Marlowe. He's
still relatively
younger.
Yeah, his voice. He's
great.
Absurd.
I've taken him on the road with me, and he's hands down one of the best. You know, singers, we both got.
And as a human, he's just a great
country boy from North Carolina. And I mean, like, we just hit it off from day one. And I just respected, like, his talents, and he kind of respected mine. And we just kind of, you know, I got two cuts on his last album. And it's just been cool to see him, you know, grow and really get that fan base he deserves.
Yeah, to see people overseas and in a club in England singing back his songs.
Yeah, that's great. So cool, guys like that. And I mean, there's I really like that Jake Worthington.
Yeah,
he's great.
He's Mark Chestnut reincarnated,
just country to the bone.
Yeah, and he's been that way since he was back in Texas. And then it's cool to see him come to Nashville. But yeah, you go to a Jake Worthington show and it's like stepping into a dang time machine.
Yeah, you know what you're getting.
Yeah,
and like and I know he's like blew up now, and he's in Zach Top. I mean, Zach
was one of those people that when he walked in, first time we had him on the Rage, on the other podcast that we had with Nikki T and Kurt, and then he hung out after and smoked a couple cigars with us for a few hours, which was cool. But when there's certain people that like walk in a room, and this was 3 years ago, he just had that kind of like that aura to him where you're like, this kid's gonna be something. And I didn't think he'd be where he's at like now this quickly, but
I mean, like watching Lainey blow up.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I remember when she was playing shows with me. I remember she flipped like a side by side of some mud ball. I'm like, and people are like, I wonder if she's that country. I'm like, she is.
She is Louisiana, 100%
that country. Because that was the first thing I thought when I met her. Hey, honey. You know, just her lips didn't even touch when she talked. And I mean, I was like, so people that asked me, like, she that? Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. You talk about mud bogs. You've gotten to do shows in all different places. For those that haven't been to a mud bog or don't know the mud bog culture, how would you describe it? Because I've gotten to do some mud bog shows from being a tour manager back in the day. Those places are wild.
You go to Central Florida and go to a mud bog, bring your Bible with you.
Yeah, you'll see it all.
You're going to see it all. And I mean, I'm talking, and I mean, the people that come, I mean, I remember me and Colt Ford back in the day doing some of them.
Oh, the mud digger days, bro. Those days were wild.
Like, 10,000 people would show up to these things. Stripper poles mounted in the bed of their trucks.
Yeah. BYOB.
Just like the stuff you would see. Man, yeah, I can't even say some of it. It's so bad.
Yeah, because I did one. I remember doing one in Mississippi, and I remember doing one in Louisiana. I remember the one in Mississippi, they took me. I was when I was with the Muscadine guys, and Gary and Charlie being from Mobile, they're looking at me like Yankee Doodle Dandy. I was like their little pet when we go do runs in the South, where they'd be like, show this boy show Mr. New York something. And these two guys from Louisiana took me out on this mud bog. I remember just seeing you end up in these holes, and just anything goes.
It's like
redneck circus.
But I eat that stuff up.
Oh, yeah. Like, no, that's what I'm saying. I bet you love it.
After the show, I'm like, where's the side-by-side?
I'm getting out there.
Let's go amongst the people.
Let's get out there.
I end up muddy as crap, ruin a pair of boots. You know, probably gave out a hat.
Yeah.
And just come back just filthy. And but I loved it. Those are my fans. So.
Yeah. What does touring look like now, like post-COVID? You're getting ready for
We're getting back
chapter.
To, like, play. Like, it's taking a minute to get back pumping. I remember the first like year after COVID, we were playing some shows, and then I don't know what's it been like 3 years since COVID. Yeah. Last year we really ramped up and started playing them, and this year we're doing significantly more shows, so it's getting back to where it, you know, kind of was.
Yeah, where have been some of your favorite places to go? Like, where would you say is like T-Far country, where like you know there's the crowd's gonna be there?
Man, Florida. I don't know why they Ohio
is a very underrated place.
It is. They love country music.
They're wild up there. Ohio people are just built different.
Oh, it's they don't give a damn.
Whether it's the festivals or it's a small little club like the Dusty Armadillo.
Oh, dude, yeah. There's a lot of nights I've not remembered at that place. But
the Bluestone in Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
The old church that they converted into
100%. Like, in God, I remember Jamboree in the Hills back in the day.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Country concert.
Yeah, so country concerts where Raised Rowdy was started. Nicky T started that by going, went out there for a bachelor party in 2012. FGL and Wyatt McCubbin played the camper party. They each played two sets. So it was Wyatt, then FGL, then Wyatt and FGL again on a little, not a little pop-up
trailer.
What a
big difference.
Yeah, in 2012, like years ago. And that's like where the initial Raised Rowdy crew came from, was Nicky T and his buddies getting drunk and camping at country concert. So now we host the camper party out there, and we're like involved with that festival. But they're wild out there, because that's been going 42 years, family-owned, BYOB, not a hotel for 30 miles, so everybody there camps. So you have 30,000 people camping, and it runs like a fine oil machine. Like,
it was crazy. That I remember the first time I played it was me. I was playing in Colt Ford's band.
Okay.
But I got to open for Colt, because at the time I was like opening using his band.
Yeah.
And I remember there's just people as far, like 30,000 people or
up
something.
Up on the hill, yeah.
And I was so nervous. And then Colt played and Jamie Johnson played. And it was just crazy. I remember going back and being one of the headliners. And then I played God so many, you know, the Gorge. I remember playing there.
That place trips you out with
it. And that's cool.
You hit that golf ball out there.
Yeah, and then the, Coachella place.
Stagecoach.
Stagecoach. I remember doing that. And the more people that are there, a lot of times it's like the less nervous I get.
Why is that, you think?
Because, like, you go to play at the Opry. Like, I'm nervous as a seed tick opening day of turkey season. I mean, I'm like trembling in my boots, because at the Opry, you know, you go, hey, I'm Tyler Farr, you know, and everyone's just quiet. You can hear a pin drop.
It's like a writer's round.
It's a writer's round. It's a bluebird on steroids. Yeah. And they're listening to everything you say, which is cool, and it's terrifying at the same. It's kind of like playing at church.
Yeah.
So that's probably why. But, yeah, like the Grizzly Rose in Denver.
Oh, dude, the shrimp and the wings after the show there. I don't know, where do they fly that damn shrimp in from? I'm like, we're in Colorado. There shouldn't be good shrimp here.
Freshwater shrimp.
But it probably is freshwater. No. Actually, it could be anything. I don't know. But, yeah, the Grizzly Rose, those crowds are great. Texas always.
Yeah, Billy Bob's, clubs. Those kind of places. Just kind of staples.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate enough to play it. A lot of them. So.
Yeah, Coyote Joe's and the Blind Horse.
Oh, back God, in
Reno. Blind Horse isn't around anymore. That place closed.
I heard about it.
But Coyote Joe's, like the Carolinas. And that, to me, is one of my favorite parts about going around when I got to do the touring stuff was, like we said earlier, country is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you get the stigma of like, oh, there can't be country music in Chicago. You go to the Windy City Smokeout. There's or Joe's on Weed or Joe's Live or Carol's or any of those places.
You know, I played all up and down New Jersey, and you got there. And I mean, these people are just dying for country music.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're some of the biggest rednecks. Like, you know, I'd put them up against Alabama sometimes, you know, like people don't realize what it is. Yeah. Like Brantley said, country is countrywide, you know, and it is. They're everywhere.
Yeah. Looking back, what advice would you give to somebody that 20-something-year-old driving out to Nashville and their old beat-up Hyundai coming out from a place like a small town like yourself that's coming to Nashville to give this thing a go?
Don't be a sissy and just get your ass back up and get on the horse, because it's going to knock you down a million times.
Yeah.
It just is. Whether you make it right out the gate, it's not always going to stay that way. You're going to, you know, so you just can't quit.
Yeah, there's ups and downs, and everybody kind of goes through seasons.
Because that's what happens a lot of times with, well, why didn't he make it? Well, he gave up. He went there, and he quit, and he moved back home because it was too hard.
Yeah, he got bucked off and didn't climb back up on the horse.
Yeah, it's like movie 8 Seconds, one of my favorite movies. Like, cowboy up.
Yeah, you gotta get back up and get back on there. And then what's the big goal for 2025? We're back to doing shows like we were doing. We got new music coming out. Like, what's when you talk with the team, like, what are you guys really pushing for this year?
Just
what is 2025 gonna be?
You know, just want to shake things up and get music out to my fans, because that's what's most important. They don't, you know, a lot of times we as artists get caught up in like the charts, and oh, I haven't had a hit in 6-7 years, whatever, you know. And but these country fans, they don't care about that.
Yeah,
you know, they, and my fans are diehard, and they've been super loyal to me, and they just want new music. That's all they want.
Yeah, what does a Tyler Farr fan look like? Like, describe your fan base, your diehard.
Well, usually it's a truck, probably with glass packs and a number 3 sticker on the back.
Yeah.
Maybe a No Fear sticker. I just dated myself, but man, they're just good old boys. And I've that's why I go, and like after a show, I'll go and meet them and hang with them. And they're like, man, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm just like you. I shop at freaking Tractor Supply and do the same, shoot deer and do the same things that they do. You know, I just, singing is all I'm good at, so that's what I do.
Yeah.
And shooting stuff, I'm good at that too.
Yeah, dude. And we're very excited next week. So this episode coming out, coming to a bar near you's out, but we're doing a like release party the night before. And it's cool. We do events with Steve Ford
over at the Duck Blind.
At the Duck Blind at Riley's Bar. And talk about your history with that place, and you were part of that Midtown explosion with Whiskey Jam, with Winners and Losers becoming the spots years ago. Like, as you were popping and blowing up, those spots were becoming staples.
Yeah, it was
in Nashville.
It was pretty wild to see that whole thing unfold, because I saw it from the beginning, like when Ward started it, and I've known Steve Ford forever.
Yeah.
I met him years ago with Steve Smith that owns Tootsie's and Honky Tonk Central and stuff. And me and Steve became good friends and just kind of ran around the same people.
Yeah.
And I remember when Ward started that whole thing, and a lot of these artists like that are now like played there.
Yeah.
A lot of them have written big songs.
Yeah.
And there was just so much talent, and that was just kind of a brilliant way of showcasing like the talent that people didn't normally get to see,
because
they were behind the scenes and hadn't made it yet. And I just saw that thing growing and growing. And I remember I was in Winners. We used to have these things called a pub crawl, and I remember me and Catino would go walk down Music Row from publishing office to publishing office to publishing office. They'd each have like 15 songs. They'd pick their 15 songs they wanted to play. And we'd listen and listen and go hop around. They'd all have drinks for us. And after hearing, you know, like freaking 500 songs in a day, I remember going into Winners, sitting there having a whiskey drink, and they had had a, they were having like a writer's round thing. It was like 6 p.m. And I remember Jonathan Singleton, it was going around to him, and he sang Guy Walks Into a Bar, which I passed on the actual demo of it. But he started playing it acoustic.
As you walk into a bar.
Yes. And I was sitting there, and I turned around. I was like, what the hell is that? And I was like, oh, shit. That's a freaking hammer. And I went up to Alex Heddle that was doing his publishing at the time, his pitch guy and stuff. And I said, dude, does anyone have that on hold? He goes, no. And I said, can I put it on hold? He goes, yeah. I said, that's going to be my next single. And I said, when it goes number one, I'm going to come back to Whiskey Jam. I'm going to sing it. And it went number one. Me and Singleton got up there at Whiskey Jam, and we sang it. So it was a cool moment. But it's just a lot of memories, a lot of great memories were made at Whiskey Jam. And I'm sure it'll continue to be made.
Yeah, dude. There's something special about the scene in Midtown. Like right off Music Row. And you got to give something for the kids that move to town, somewhere for them to play their originals, you know?
100%.
So that's what we try to do within the ecosystem, is doing the rounds. And we've already seen some folks that in the past few years that we've been doing this that have gone nuts. And it's like you watch them do the rounds and just figuring it out. And it's cool, dude. But it's cool that you got to be a part of that, kind of the start of Division Street being that thing.
I mean, I feel pretty freaking lucky to have been there and been able to see that grow
and be a part of it, and yeah. have the moment like that where the guy walks into a bar and to see your friends come up in that scene, and it's
absolutely
you're part of that era, man.
You're
part of one of the golden eras of Nashville that's bridged us to where we're at right now, where this is the metropolis with all the damn bachelorette parties and the new Titans Stadium, and maybe one day we'll get the Super Bowl here, and they're talking about WrestleMania and all this shit coming here.
That's why I stay out in the country.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, dude. It's funny. When I first moved here, I lived in Murray County. I lived in Spring Hill when I first moved down here. Used to commute from Spring Hill up to Broadway to work at Dirks's place and do security for my first year in town. Well, so I know about Old Murray County. Columbia is a special place.
Yeah, I'm in Chapel Hill, just right down the road. And like when COVID hit, you didn't even know COVID was going
on. Oh, yeah, all the way out there, man. even going to Williamson County, man, Franklin's bar numbers were up that point, man. That tin roof.
You're like, well, they ain't let us work, so let's get hammered. You know,
Yeah, dude, it was wild times back then. But
I'm older now, so I kind of stay out of my farm. But
yeah.
And I like to go and hear some of these new riders and stuff. And that's kind of something like, I get out there and every once in a while I'll get a little bored. So I'll go, and that's why, you know, we'll be at Whiskey Jam we'll be at Duck Blonde here soon.
Yeah, dude. And we're excited to have you over there. And yeah, man, there's so much talent like moving to town. And what's cool is a lot of the kids that are coming now, they were born in like 05, 04, like the young ones that are coming in.
Oh, man.
So they grew up like some of the first country songs they fell in love with were off your first project.
Oh, I know. Like, they'll be like, man, I used to rock Redneck Crazy in middle school. And I'm like, shh.
Yeah, and that's what made, but that's inspiring them to hear and do this now. Like, you're at that point now where those hits from back in the day have, like, shaped this generation to want to do this shit.
Well, the problem is I just forgot I was getting older. So when they tell me that, I'm like, oh, damn. Yeah, I guess. Jesus. Okay. Time marches on, you know. But it was like, I remember, I think Dylan Marlowe's at my shop. He's like, and I had a plaque for Redneck Crazy. It said copies sold. He's like, copies? Yeah, CDs, buddy. Yeah. Like, it's back.
It's back when you go to the Walmart.
Yeah.
Buy the
go
CD.
Go to the Walmart and buy your CD, take a video with it. Those days are gone. There's like five artists. It's like Kendrick Lamar, Seal, and Michael Bolton.
And that's it.
That's it. That's all you get.
Yeah, everything else you got to get on Spotify and Apple and different times, man.
Different times.
But Spotify's a spot. You've had a ton of streams, though. Over 802 million streams. You kind of came in at the streaming, the end of the CDs and the beginning of the streaming.
It was, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was right around when the streaming kind of started. And it's crazy to like to look at, you know, the Redneck Crazy numbers now and Guy Walks in the Bar numbers, and people are still streaming it. And that's why I cut and released songs like that. I didn't want to release songs that were just like here and gone. You know, I wanted to release songs that would be around for a while.
Yeah.
So I'm glad some of them did.
Yeah, dude. It's awesome, man. But coming to a bar near you, the new track, it's out right now. And then we've got some more music coming. Do we know when the next one's coming?
It'll probably be in a, you know, month or two. We're just going to let this one breathe for a little bit and see how they react, I think. Hopefully people will relate to this and dig their nails into it a bit.
Yeah, well, no, we'll be digging our nails into it, man. We're very excited.
Well, I appreciate it.
T-Far, man, it was an honor to have you on here. I appreciate it. And I want to get down to the farm, and I want you to show me, as a New York guy, how to properly use tannerite. Do this, do that. Like, I want the experience on the farm, because I've heard it's something.
We can do whatever you want, buddy. I assure you. I appreciate you.
Hey, appreciate you, brother. And thank you for, we love you at Raised Rowdy, and seriously, like, thank you for all the memories of songs. I'm excited to see this new chapter, man. 2025 is going to be a big year for us so far, man. Well, y'all be sure to check out our boy Tyler Farr. Coming to a Bar Near You is out now, and go stream all the old stuff too, but be on the lookout, all this new shit that is coming in the year 2025. I'm going to be a big year for our boy T Farr. And get out to a show on the road. Go visit the website, get your tickets. The man and the band are going out on the road this year, and it's going to be awesome. And thank you guys always for watching. Shout out to our friends from Surfside, Vodka Lemonade, Vodka Iced Tea, no bubbles, no troubles, and be sure to visit RaisedRowdy.com for more on us. For my man T-Far, I'm Matt Barrill. This has been Outside the Round.
I ain't never been the kind for staying one place for too long. I ain't never been the best at saying I love you to a girl I love. Only got a couple tricks on my sleeve. They usually just make them leave.